Hello and welcome to That Haunted Show. It's finally here. This is something I've been wanting to do for, a long time now. It's taken a lot to finally get round and actually do it. So I've wanted to kind of talk about things and experiences and stuff like that. I've come up with a lot of different ideas, from like habit creation to like education podcasts, and my heart wasn't in it, you know? And it wasn't until I was looking through my interests and stuff like that, I was trying to figure out. Yeah, it was hard to narrow down. I mean, looking at like talents and stuff you've done, I wasn't really in the best mindset, and it's hard to think of positive things you've actually done. And it wasn't until I was listening to another podcast and I was just like, man, I listen to paranormal podcasts all the time and there's so many out there and so many different things, and I had so many different ideas of how we could like amalgamate all these different aspects into one show. So I kind of forced myself to do it. It wasn't until I was listening to another podcast, actually. I'm trying to think of the podcast name. It was The Mindset Mentor by Rob Dial. Basically, he, after the episode, instructed you to do one exercise, which was write down 20 things you'd do if money was no option, right? I'm sitting there, notebook in hand. I'm trying to think, like, all right, what would I be doing right now if money was not an option? And my mind just goes blank. I'm sitting there thinking, and I think I wrote down maybe two or three, like, really poor excuses just to try and justify it, and it just to try and make myself feel better. But you know what, it didn't work. But actually, it did work. It made me realize that nothing's holding me back, only I'm holding me back. I mean, there was a lot of anxiety of, you know, you hear yourself in a recording and stuff like that, you hear yourself on someone's phone and you're like, Jesus, I sound like that. Yeah, there was a lot of that. I mean, I did the trailer and I got that out there and it got a few views. I made the social accounts as well. So I'm kind of putting myself out there. I haven't put anything on my like personal Instagram to promote. But after this episode goes live, I'm going to consider it and start promoting it a bit more. So hopefully attract a lot more listeners so we can all talk about our interests and our passions. Everyone's got a scary story to tell. I've got plenty, so if you guys are like me, just get in contact. We've got all our socials, which are That Haunted Show on Instagram and Twitter. You can message me on there, or if you want to be a bit more private, you can either DM me or send an email at thathauntedshow@gmail.com. So basically, yeah, if you've got a scary story to tell, it'd be great to hear from you. If you don't want to add or anything like that, you want to use a different name, that's absolutely fine, but it'd be good to hear from you and just to create a platform where we can all talk about these things, and maybe UFO experiences to like weird happenings, poltergeist activities, movement around the house, like even to possession. People have got stories about everything and I can't get enough of them. So without any more preaching, welcome to That Haunted Show. I'm your host, Lewis, and today we're going to be talking about Sarah Lockwood Winchester. The name may sound familiar if you think back to 19th century cowboys, prospecting, all that. Back to the Future 3 comes to mind straight away, just because, man, I love those movies. They're one of my favourite. And the third one is actually my favourite. I remember one time, me and my girlfriend were actually sitting there watching it at our old place, and we were just so knackered and tired that the movie just started replaying, and we just watched it for a second time in a row. Yeah, I was pretty lazy, but it was good, you know. I love that movie. Like, I could quote Back to the Future all day, which I'm not going to, so don't worry. Back to the story. Civil War was ripe and causing catastrophe and thousands of deaths all across the United States. It was overall a pretty terrible time to live. From the Civil War to dueling pistols at dawn and all the like god-awful diseases that went around. I mean, you had cholera, tuberculosis, Asiatic, which I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, which is otherwise known as the Russian flu, which actually caused 1 million deaths worldwide. Well, this is an estimated figure. It's probably a lot more. It all just reminds me of that really terrible Western movie. What was it called? It was that Seth MacFarlane, the dude who makes Family Guy, and it was just like all the ways to die in the West. I just remember one scene where they like had this fight in a diner and like everyone's just dropping dead, and then the mayor outside is literally being eaten by wolves. Yeah, it was a pretty terrible film, but it's linked, so I thought I'd put it there. A million ways to die in the West, that's it. But one positive is that the industry was in a boom. Steel manufacturing and railroad development, travel and transport was now really accessible across the whole of the United States, bringing together like even the most remote of locations. From these rural farmers, they were now getting train rides. You could go into the city for a weekend break or get away or vice versa. Candles and dangerous kerosene lamps were now becoming electric light bulbs. Side note, and I found this out the other day off some random Instagram page, so I haven't actually checked this out, but apparently, according to Edison, when he invented this light bulb, this new artificial light craze went about. He believed that humans would no longer need sleep. Credit where credit's due. The dude, he is a genius, but come on, man. I need my 8 hours at least. Jesus Christ. It wasn't until the turn of the 20th century that people started to live a more urbanized life, choosing to move to these new big built-up cities, opposed to living and surviving on the rural countryside from farming and producing crops. Welcome to 9-to-5 commercialization, folks. Enough of the backstory, let me introduce you to our leading man today, William Wirt Winchester. What? I mean, that's pretty unusual. Is that short for something, or is that like a common name in the States? It just sounds odd. Word. William Wirt Winchester was born on June 22nd in 1837 in Baltimore, Maryland. I don't know if the pronunciations are right. It just makes me think of Maryland cookies. You may know the name if you, like me, have had your parents sit down and make you watch these really old, terrible, like, what they call, like, spaghetti westerns or something like that. Basically, Winchester Rifles, or to be exact, the Winchester Repeating Arms Company, which isn't a mouthful at all. Will was the only boy out of three children, making him the sole heir of his father's business, but we'll get to that shortly. His father, Oliver Fisher Winchester, and mother, Jane Ellen Hope, were both really successful individuals in their own right. His father opened his own men's furnishing store, which I actually had to look this up. I had no idea what a men's furnishing store is, but basically back in the day, it's a fancy way of saying a men's clothes store, just for men. I was thinking of like some dirty old Western IKEA. Like, I mean, furnishing, I'm going to furnish my house, IKEA, Old West. Apparently not. You learn something new every day. Business was booming during the 40s, and nothing was slowing him down. He was certainly well off financially and wanted to take on something completely different. So he approached the struggling Volcanic Repeating Arms Company, taking it over and redesigning some of their weapons, turning them into even more effective killing machines. Because hey, the West is a pretty tough time, death is everywhere, and business is booming. So 9 years pass, and the Volcanic Repeating Arms Company now becomes the new, well, you guessed it, Winchester Repeating Arms Company. They had patented and manufactured the perfect weapon to cause death, the repeating rifle. It was a simple-to-use weapon and definitely packed a tremendous punch, making it favourable between settlers in the American West. Now, I personally don't know too much about guns, but even I know the name, and I'm pretty sure I've used them in like a Call of Duty or two. Will became the treasurer of his father's company and held his position until his death in 1881 at the age of 70. Due to the success of his father's company and his management of it, Will became a very prosperous young individual. Being financially independent and of an upper class, he met a young woman named Sarah Lockwood Pardee. The two became inseparable and wed a few years later, on September 30th, 1862. 4 years later, though, tragedy struck as the couple's firstborn child, Annie Pardee Winchester, born on the 15th of June, 1866, passed away just 6 weeks after her birth, on July 25th, from marasmus, which I had to look up, and it sounds like a pretty horrible condition. Marasmus, well, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, was a really serious disease of the time, causing extreme malnourishment, and actually a reduction of 62% of your average body weight for your age. Caused by some kind of protein deficiency, causing the body not to take on the nourishment and nutrients it actually needs, it was a really common case back then, especially in children. But luckily, as of diet changes and technology and medicine, as of 2016, there has been a study and only 3 children in the whole of the United States have died from it, dropping from the low thousands back then. So this began the downward spiral of events haunting Sarah until the very day that she died. The couple really struggled to deal with the events of their daughter's tragic death, and the two never conceived another child during their time together. During the spring of 1881, William himself passed away from an ongoing battle with tuberculosis, another event that would scar the very soul of Sarah. William was laid to rest in Evergreen Cemetery in New Haven, situated right next to his daughter Annie. and Sarah was about to inherit a lot more than she bargained for. After her daughter and late husband's death, Sarah inherited a large amount of money, approximately $20 million from his estate. Bearing in mind this was the late 1800s, considering the time and rate of inflation, it was approximately around $500 million. But that wasn't all William had left her. She received a stake in her husband's company, and I'm not just talking about a small stake here. She was given a 50% stake, making her the majority shareholder, and making her immediately one of the wealthiest women alive. Her income was averaging at about $1,000 a day, which again, looking back at the time, the rate of inflation, how currency's different back then, it worked out approximately $26,000 a day. Imagine having $26,000 a day. Damn, that would be nice. You can buy a lot of bits. The money and the shares were nice, but she was left with something else too, and an intolerable guilt and fear that she was now solely responsible for all the lives claimed by Winchester Rifles. Being now truly alone, she felt as if she had to do something with her time, just to keep her occupied and distracted. She couldn't be still, and it's claimed the fear of the souls closing in on her was completely unbearable. From the tragic death of her daughter and her late husband, she felt it was only a matter of time before these vengeful spirits now claimed her. Right, so I've looked this up and I found multiple quotes of this, and nothing's actually set in stone. I'm a believer and I could see it happening, but this was the 1800s and there's no old Western Facebook or anything like that, so it's pretty much all kind of hearsay at the moment. But this is a statement according to her sister. Sarah had supposedly gone to a medium back in Boston so she could try and speak to her husband and just kind of get the weight off her chest and deal with the loss and get closure. According to her sister, she was told that she must leave home and travel west, but no destination was ever finalized. She was told to build a ranch for the spirits to appease them and continuously expand so they could find a place of restitude and forgiveness. So Sarah travelled west across states, finally settling in California. At this stage, it's very widely assumed that she was dealing with extreme to severe depression, which is understandable, losing your family and thinking thousands, if not millions of dead spirits are after you, right? Friends claim she was a woman on a mission though, that she was no longer herself. Moving away from everything, Sarah bought approximately 140 acres of land in California, which is now downtown Los Altos. On the land, she intended to build a large ranch, just like the medium said, and finish an unfurnished farmhouse so her sister and brother-in-law could stay with her. As the fear of being alone, which in retrospect, apparently she had staff in nearly the triple figures working on the surrounding land. I mean, she had vineyards, fruit trees, and pretty much everything you could think of. This place was sustainable in its own right. But yeah, she didn't want to be alone. So in 1884, she began to build, and build is the key word here, and definitely an understatement. The woman built for nigh on 4 decades, and for God's sake, she even actually has, right, I looked this up, she really does have the Guinness World Record for longest continuous construction. I think it was around 36 years, I'll double check and let you know, but I mean, Jesus, that's some good going, right? But she had some very peculiar and odd rules that all the contractors and builders and staff must follow. Basically, there had to be continuous work day and night, and they had to take shifts, and no one was ever allowed like time off, as but they could have time off as long as they were replaced. Basically, people had to be working 24/7. She needed that background noise. Apparently, it soothed her, and she felt like there was progress. She didn't like there not being progress. She had to have something happening constantly. So she didn't want an architect either. She decided she was going to come up with the idea and the plan and everything all by herself. Who needs an architect, right? Like, they know what they're doing. Basically, she's running a 19th century Sims here. She wanted the house to be a 7-story mansion. Why? God only knows. I mean, 7 stories, that is ridiculous. She had a beautiful view. I'll post the pictures on the Instagram because this house, it did look incredible. And fair dues, she made it all happen. The house's exterior was extravagant and peculiar as the interior itself. There were doors that were put in that were fake and just led to brick wall behind. Staircases that literally went to nowhere, creating a weird, confusing loop. and rooms overlooking other rooms. The layout was said to be intentionally so confusing that the spirits would not be able to reach her. Also, another, obviously, it looks eerie, but it had a purpose. Basically, at this time in her life, Sarah was dealing with really bad arthritis and only being able to lift her leg a few inches at a time. So basically, she had these, I forget what they're called, early riser steps, which basically looked like baby steps, just so she could actually get up and down. And I mean, the house was seven stories at the time, so she needed to be able to get up to the top. And yeah, they look creepy. So contractors were brought in, chopped and changed so regularly that there was no solid, continuous blueprints for the house at all. As soon as one extension was done, or a contractor was fed up of working his employees to the grave, they were gone and the blueprints with them. These lack of plans meant that rooms were literally forgotten. The house was so big, they were forgotten. Rooms were built on top of rooms or in front of rooms. I mean, to this day, the mystery house, the Winchester Mystery House, has literally still been finding new rooms that were not accounted for originally. The house as it stands today is now only 4 stories tall. And I say only considering it was initially 7. But the 1906 San Francisco earthquake was so intense and tremendously strong that it caused absolute structural damage. It demolished huge portions of the property. But here's the really odd thing here. Sarah, being as savvy as ever, she decided she wanted a floating foundation, which basically, I had to look this up. A floating foundation is kind of, it allows for movement and sway in the building itself, opposed to a brick and mortar foundation, which would have just split and the whole mansion would have crumbled itself. So yeah, she did a pretty good job. So good shout, Sarah. That's pretty good going. So I'm going to break down some actual facts and figures of the house. Try and bear this in mind and picture this. I'll put the pictures on the Instagram so you can actually see, but just reading them off a website or listening to me read them off, it's hard to comprehend how big this house is. It's huge, right? But I'll break them down so you can hear them. Basically, there was roughly around 161 rooms in total, and the absolute total figure is currently unknown. As I said, literally to this day, they think there is still more to the house that they just haven't come across it, like, themselves yet. To this day, it's just mind-boggling. But let's break it down. So, 40 bedrooms, 2 ballrooms, 1 complete, and 1 not yet finished. And when I say ballroom, this is literally a ballroom. Like, think of, like, the shining, opulent, beautiful ballrooms, or like some Cinderella fairy tale kind of stuff. These are ridiculous. 47 fireplaces, 10,000 planes of glass, including a sheet of glass from Tiffany's, which was the most expensive ever produced, which, as far as I'm aware, is still actually in the Winchester Mystery House. There's 17 chimneys, 2 basements, as well as 3 elevators. And also elevators, which were really high tech for the time. Nowhere really had elevators. Sarah herself was, she was seen as really odd, basically because she had a really good passion for interest and science, for science and technology, and she was really up there. A lot of the features in the house were pioneering from the time. I mean, she even had communication systems that she could speak to her staff. Also, she had like this kind of basic rudimentary kind of car washing system, which basically started washing it for you and you'll just kind of finish the job. It had a lot of potential. It had a really kind of basic heating system using steam as well, which was really functional and really effective. And basically, she had sought out and found these people who had made these inventions and kind of got them in so she could kind of incorporate them to her house, which, yeah, she was a go-getter. She knew what she wanted. But being the time and being, unfortunately, a woman, it was seen as being really bad and odd, and everyone was a bit skeptic of her and scared, purely just because she was a woman and had these interests, which just seems ridiculous and dated, but that's just how it goes back then. The house featured many opulent gold and silver furnishings. Sarah was known for going for the most expensive materials going at the time. All the staircases were made of solid redwood, just like the exterior. They had to be easy riser steps, so I didn't actually know what these were, and man, they're creepy looking. I mean, they had their purpose, but they did look scary. they were definitely a really odd aspect, and the staircases, they curved and changed and different diagonals and stuff like that. It was basically the interior of the house just made you feel claustrophobic and really eerie. In the whole house, it's said there was only one working toilet, just one. Which, in a 7-story mansion, what the hell, that's ridiculous. I mean, she had 40 bathrooms. All the others were made to be decoys for the spirits. I guess the spirits need to pee too, or something like that. Who knows? And she also slept in a different room every night, even randomizing rotations. So basically, everything she could do to be a pain in the ass so the spirits could not actually find her. Overall, life was... it was pretty crazy for Miss Winchester over there. Her husband worked for a company that was responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. Her only child died from a really rare disease, and then her husband dies from tuberculosis, leaving her as the majority stakeholder in a company that makes a ridiculous amount of revenue from death. It's a pretty tough situation. I could imagine I'd be a little depressed too, to say the least. But that would definitely be an understatement here. Ever since her daughter's death, she felt as if she was cursed, and then the final nail in the coffin, ooh, poor choice of words, pardon the pun, was speaking to the medium, who confirmed her suspicions, because mediums are always right, especially because she was a very wealthy young woman, and no doubt she was paid very well. Slightly off topic, there's a lot of speculation about mediums and stuff like that these days. I do believe there's people out there who do have good intent and wholeheartedness and they do want to help, but of course with anything you are going to get a lot of fraudsters out there. A lot of people trick you, and these days everything's all online. I could get some vast details or answer some really vague questions, and you could go on Facebook and search someone up, and it's ridiculous the amount of things you can do online these days. But back then, to be credible, and actually you'd have to have some kind of insight and knowledge about this kind of power to assess people, I guess, and try and get into them and figure them out. I do believe there's people out there. I mean, I've had family members use mediums to try and contact loved ones have passed. I've had people in the family pass away and they've tried to get in contact, and they really have had some interesting and peculiar results, which it's definitely, it goes to show, sometimes there's coincidence, and sometimes there's more than coincidence. Right, I'll leave it at that, but they're just my thoughts. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. You can believe what you want to believe, but here at the Haunted Show, I believe in a lot. Probably too much. You can tell me something and I'm like, yeah, of course, I believe that. Yeah, ghosts, seen that. UFOs, of course. Yeah. I'm not one of those people like, I don't believe it until there's proof, because this kind of study and research, you're never going to have absolute proof. This isn't an exact science. There's no set regulations. There's no study in this. This is just something that happens. It's paranormal. It's not normal. It's unexplained. But there's just my two cents on the story. So now it's pretty much confirmed that she's haunted. All these spirits that have fallen from Winchester rifles are now after her, or so she thinks. I'd be pretty stressed out too if I was in her shoes. If you were thinking this, thinking you're making all this money off death and you've got all these souls coming after you. I'd be living a life of constant misery too, feeling on edge and just building and building continuously to try and house all these people and these spirits that have died from her weapons, which realistically, they've got nothing to do with her. She was married to William. It was his father's company. But I guess at the time, maybe that was her way of thinking. Everyone has their own opinions and thoughts, and I'm sure she struggled and was battling some demons and, yeah, had to deal with this and just felt like it was all on her. So she leads this life of just constant misery, but there is the fact that she probably wouldn't be too happy to actually hear, but Winchester rifles went on to be ridiculously successful in the First World War, as well as the Second, but probably won't mention that to her. I guess death sells, and the best time to sell is World Wars, I guess. From visions and the voices, she's changing the floor plan constantly, believing that she could prolong her death for as long as possible. I'm pretty sure spirits can fly through walls, though. I mean, we've all seen those old cartoons, like Scooby-Doo, right, where they're all, like, running through the corridor and, like, they're just chasing them. Got all that music playing. I don't know why my mind automatically goes slow. I used to love Scooby-Doo as a kid, man. It was the good stuff. So Sarah is literally, she's scared to death. I mean, literally. R.I.P. She died of a heart failure in her sleep on September the 5th, 1922. Okay, 1922, so... yeah, she probably know how successful the weapons in World War One are, but she doesn't need to know about World War Two. Probably best not to say. Her body was then transferred back to New Haven and put to rest next to her husband and child. The family finally back together, and hopefully Sarah's mind now put to rest. This is the part of the story I really want to just break down and elaborate, that like everything, like I said previously, everything about the paranormal, there's no exact, there's no definite, there's no this is that and that is this. It's a speculative topic. I mean, we've all got opinions. Some people straight out don't believe in anything paranormal, but yeah, some people don't believe in the paranormal, yeah, but they believe aliens and extraterrestrial life, which I completely understand. Like I said, I believe in it all. I believe in energy, our soul, everything resonates, and I don't believe when we're gone, we're really gone. Especially kind of energy and intent and things like that. I mean, you could think of someone or someone passes away and they're on your mind a lot. They're in your subconscious, they're in your psyche, and you're just thinking about them all the time. You can't sleep, you start to see them, you start to smell them. It's all kind of experiences. And who knows if it's your mind making it up or if it's something that's actually happening to you. I don't want to say like a haunt, like, because this could be a loved one. It could just be a visit. It could be something to help and soothe your mind. Maybe from their behalf, they're trying to look out for you and care for you. But, yeah. What I was saying is, this is all, like I said, purely speculative. There's been no official documentation saying that Sarah was ever cursed or, in fact, haunted. As far as we're aware, she hasn't said that to anyone. There's no written evidence. All we know are the facts of her tragic life. But it is said that she was extremely joyous and a really nice, kind-hearted woman. But looking at the facts, I mean, she created the great and infamous Winchester Mystery Mansion. So we may never know, but her legend will always live on with the mansion itself. So here's where it gets a bit weird. She writes a will. Of course she would, especially because you've got the fear that you're being haunted by millions of spirits. It would be crazy not to, right? But having an obsession with the number 13, she splits it into 13 sections. Looks like the ghosts won't be getting their hands on any of her money. All 13 sections were signed, and everything was left to her niece Marion, who took what she wanted and then auctioned the rest of her aunt's belongings away, as well as the Winchester house. I guess she really must love crazy old Aunt Sarah. I mean, think of that. You're being left this huge, opulent mansion, and you just take what you want and sell it. Maybe she heard the tales from Aunt Sarah and was like, yeah, I'm not living in that creepy ass mansion. Which would make sense. If Sarah told me she was being haunted by all these spirits in this house and I get left it, I'm going to be out of there. I'll take it and sell it. But there's no official documentation according to her biographer. But the current owners of the house, stated that they spent thousands emptying the house, saying it took movers truckloads a day for 6 weeks just to empty the house of furniture. The house itself went up for sale and was valued at around $5,000 and went on to sell for a ridiculous $135,000, which is pretty odd. That's a really a lot of money. It's for a $5,000 and it sells for $135,000, it just seems really odd, right? It's almost as if someone kind of knew something before and had the foresight and knew about the legend of this house and the future potential it could be to be the creepiest place on earth. I mean, it's like the legend preceded itself, and whoever bought it has gone on to probably live a really good life. Or they might have got haunted AF. Who knows? I mean, you bought apparently a haunted house for like a ridiculous amount over the asking price. So you're either crazy or you just kind of liked it. So who knows? Today, it's actually used as a public attraction and is stated as one of the most haunted houses in America. And in some cases, some people even state it as one of the most haunted houses in the world. Yet, there's a lot of mixed reviews. Some people have gone there with no experiences or anything like that. I think a lot of it, for me, I do believe in like residual energy haunts and energy being tied to an object, yet all of her belongings were sold off. Obviously, like, there's going to be original furnishings. There's going to be, like, the floorboards, the doors. I mean, the house itself can hold energy, which there could be something there. I mean, the house hasn't changed. It's the interior's changed, yeah. But a lot of it makes me think of, like, when people buy a house and it's all going good, nothing's happening, and then all of a sudden you start doing some redevelopment. You change the curtains, you rip up the floor, you don't like this, you don't like that. And you've got to think, like, people were living in that house for a long time. That was their home. That was where they came to rest their head. That was that almost a piece of them. And you've come along and you're like, yeah, I don't like these bright blue, pink, whatever walls. I'm going to rip this wallpaper down. You're kind of ripping down a bit of their legacy. And usually that's when the events and the weird kind of occult happenings start to happen, which is just unusual. It's something you obviously you don't really want, but it can't be helped. A lot of the times, if you just kind of state your intent, you're like, you can either say, yes, I'm aware of these spirits, etc. I know you're there. Or you can ignore it and let the activity ramp up and maybe get some professionals in. But who knows, there is no definite way of dealing with this topic. There's always going to be people out there who are going to try and prove you wrong and say, oh, you had some carbon monoxide leak, you were hallucinating, and there was this electromagnetic frequency which is really peculiar at this one spot, and it was making you see this thing or hear these noises, which it is a really rare case. I mean, a lot of paranormal activity, you get these scientists try and debunk it and stuff like that, but it's a low percentage, and it doesn't really get you that far, if you know what I mean. It can't be proved or disproved. It's just one of those speculative topics which are fascinating because we won't ever know. I mean, at some point in the future we may know, but at this point we don't know. Going back to the house, I mean, the contractors themselves, they were saying they always constantly felt that someone was watching them everywhere they went, like up down the house. Even when they went home, they said they had the presence from as if it had followed them, that same feeling, everything like that. But at this point, it was so long ago, it's all pretty much hearsay by now. The building is said to give off a very eerie feeling, which could be due to the fact that claustrophobia is probably setting in, and you're strolling around in dark, twisting corridors and rooms that literally lead to nowhere. Ah, also, I forgot to mention that there is a literal door that leads to nowhere. And when I say nowhere, it leads to the outside of the property, and before you stop and think, you're like, obviously, that's how a door works. It goes, like, a front door will go from the outside to the inside. Yeah, this door goes to the outside of the property, and is situated on the third floor. So, that's a three-story drop straight to the ground, because I guess screw you, demons. You won't want to come out there drunk. Old Sarah was on a late night out, she's getting a bit wild. Goes to the wrong door thinking it was one of her bedrooms and plummets three stories. I mean, that could be the reason of her death. I mean, did they know it was heart failure? Did she know dying asleep? She could have just passed out and fell out her door. Who knows? The house itself was an inspiration for Disney's Haunted Mansion attraction at the park, because nothing quite says Disney like vengeful spirits. There's been a lot of coverage on Sarah and her house from films coming out, TV episodes, and most notably my favorite was Ghost Adventures, which is actually how I found out about this house. I mean, I love Ghost Adventures, man, but there's a lot of talk about these things and these ghost shows, how they're so heavily edited and they find all these things where people go there in like real life and post it to YouTube or something like that, and they're like experience nothing, so they're presuming they're all heavily edited. But I think you've got to take everything with a grain of salt. Yeah, there's big production crews. There's a lot of expectations. There could be false evidence. We're never going to know unless you're actually in that industry of making and editing them, and you're kind of sworn to secrecy, I guess, by the TV channel. We won't know. I like to think it's real. The science behind it is interesting. You've got EMF meters taking electromagnetic frequency readings, and you get sharp spikes everywhere and stuff like that, and there's a lot of coincidence, and I believe coincidence is definitely the key word here. Sometimes coincidence, like I said earlier, is not just coincidence. And that EVP phenomena and stuff like that is just... I mean, it's crazy to me. It's something I really love. And I mean, I believe it. So it's down to everyone else to take what they think about it. I'm not trying to sway anyone's thoughts or opinions. It's just something I like. And something, yeah, I just enjoy to watch. Yeah, that's about it. I do believe strongly. But yeah, I'm not going to sway anyone's ideas or beliefs. That's not what I'm about. But getting back to it, there is and will always be a lot of speculation about the house. Sarah is clearly a very troubled woman, dealing with a lot of death and guilt. Mental illnesses were not really spoken about, and they were kind of hidden back then. You're trying to hide it and cover it. You wouldn't tell anyone like you kind of do now. Some people don't even do that now. I mean, there's a lot of talk about mental health and stuff like that. You're trying to repress things and hold things in, but some people find it helps. Most of the time, it's really not good for you. I mean, if you're holding a lot of things in, there's a lot of places you can talk to, a lot of people that can help you. And I mean, if you want to talk, you know, you've got my socials for that haunted show and our email. Get in contact if you've got anything troubling you, or like I said, maybe some dark stories you need to just get off your chest. I don't have to air them or anything like that. Just feel free to get in contact, and you know, you've got a platform to talk about these things here. Sarah was probably suffering from incredible depression and a lot of compulsive behaviour. From the evidence I've found and her obsession, especially for the number 13, having 13 paned windows, 13 paned ceilings, 13 step staircases. The 13th bathroom is said to be the only one that actually ever worked, and even down to her 13 part wheel. The house is said to be one of the most haunted places in the States, and some could say the world. It's said you can hear footsteps and disembodied voices on the third floor, and on rare cases you can even get visual confirmation of apparitions. Harry Houdini himself, a self-confessed believer in all things supernatural and paranormal, visited the house in order to dispute any of the stories associated with the house. Yet he couldn't. He left the house and refused to talk about it or ever return to the property again. There is also another theory out there, which this one really gets to me quite a bit. It's kind of wholesome in a way. Well, wholesome as far as hauntings go, I guess. But I'll break it down. It goes like this. Basically, the house was never haunted. It was more, let's just call it visited by her daughter and her husband. Which sounds a lot better. It's a lot better than having a million vengeful souls after you, I guess. Just checking in on the fam as you do. But this is where it gets a bit weird. There was literally a hidden safe in a forgotten room that contained two locks of hair. That hair was belonging to her late husband and daughter, which itself is pretty creepy, right? Is it coincidence or some kind of energy, spiritual attachment? I mean, you tell me. It's just a bit odd. These two objects with immense meaning drawing in energy in a hidden safe within a forgotten room. This could be a plot for a movie all by itself, but it's definitely something to think about. I mean, it's like a personal direct connection. Like what I was saying with residual energies, it's not just tied to an object. This was actually a part of them. This was the hair. I hear a lot of like people keeping objects and stuff like that from past loved ones, and even people keeping them in that airtight containers to like, so they keep that smell, and that was them. It's just, yeah, I do believe there's a lot of energy there. And I mean, may very well, it could have just been them checking up to see how their mother and wife were doing. It's a lot more of a nicer and wholesome way of thinking about it. But of course, we're never going to know. The house nowadays is an official landmark and one to be very proud of. Constant work for decades, all seen through to completion. I guess Sarah did it, but who can say if it's really haunted or not? There has been enough witnesses and speculation from the years, but does the house really live up to the reputation? These days it's literally infamous for being haunted. Is it purely just a manifestation of our fears? Is it something that we've created in ourselves, start to think about all these bad things and negative things start happening? You have this bad dream and then you start thinking about it more, and that draws in more negative energy and more, it has more power. It's like, what's that book? Like that book, The Secret. I mean, I haven't read it. I've looked at some, basically a review on YouTube, how like you have a wish, you ask the universe for something and it starts to lay out a clear path for you to go and stuff like that. It's I'm not saying it's like that, but I do believe like manifestation and energy and force, they cause intent. Like, you believe in Father Christmas, you're going to start hearing bells on the roof for like Christmas Eve and stuff like that. You believe in the Tooth Fairy, you're going to start seeing like sparkles and hearing fairy wings or something like that when you're sleeping. Who knows? It's something, of course, we're never going to know, but I am a strong believer in the fact that something is only as strong as the intent. Like, especially, sorry to go off topic here again, but people who make Ouija boards, opposed to people who buy Ouija boards, of course, like, people start getting weird experiences and they'll be like, oh, this can't be right, it's only something we've made. If anything, if it's something you've made, you've put more intent, it has a more meaningful and personal experience because you've made it, you've put all this intent and your energy into this, you're going to have more of an experience than some store-bought, like Monopoly board, pretty much. It's a lot more personal. That's about it for this episode tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. It was definitely a lot of information packed in there. I really enjoyed looking up this house. There was really a lot of stories and a lot of stuff to find. It was hard to try and narrow it down. I mean, I don't know how long we've actually been talking for right now. We're currently looking at around 47 minutes, but by the time this is compacted down, it'll probably be like a 10-minute episode because I've like screwed up every line or something like that. But I hope you guys enjoyed it. It was definitely something I want to do again. I'm looking up next topics for the next episode. I'm not quite sure what we're going to do yet, but ideally I really want to do a ghost story or something like that, more with actual evidence of hauntings or something like that. I am looking at doing the Enfield haunting, which I know there's a lot of controversy about it, whether it is all fact or fate, but there was a lot of evidence around there. I mean, it was worldwide news. It really kind of blew up. I mean, especially in England, because it was only like North London, and I can find a lot of information on it because I've always kind of been interested in the case, and nothing could ever be proven or disproven, but like I said, there's loads of evidence. We're going to round it off now. If you've got any stories of yourself, you want to get in contact with the show, like I said before, get in contact with That Haunted Show on Instagram or Twitter, or email thathauntedshow@gmail.com. It'd be great to hear from you guys. Stay spooky. Good night.